640 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The special counsel looking into possible wrongdoing by former President Trump wants to hear from former Vice President Mike Pence. CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
Special counsel Jack Smith was appointed in November to oversee the Justice Department's investigation into Donald Trump's attempts to overturn the 2020 election results, efforts that involved pressure on Mike Pence. The former vice president declined to testify before the House's January 6th committee last year, but now sources confirm Mike Pence has been subpoenaed to provide evidence to prosecutors.
More than 20,000 people have died in the earthquakes that hit Turkey's border with Syria Monday, and the window to find survivors is reaching a critical point. CBS's Chris Livesay.
We were told that a 17-year-old high school girl is still alive beneath the rubble. She managed to message a friend of hers to tell her that. So rescuers are working bucket by bucket with their bare hands, piece by piece, trying to rescue her and anyone else who might still be alive.
Her name is Sadet Koshkun. The text message said, "I'm okay. Come and help me," says her father. "All I can do is wait." But that was 4 days ago. Since then, silence.
Testimony on Capitol Hill today about the China spy balloon shot down off the South Carolina coast. Senior State Department officials have testified that steps have been taken to protect sensitive information. And at another Senate hearing, lawmakers grilled Biden administration's officials about why the balloon wasn't shot down sooner. Democrat Senator John Tester of Montana.
This administration owes Americans answers not only on what happened this past week, but on what steps they're going to take to ensure that this never happens again.
President Biden is on the road defending his administration's commitment to Social Security and Medicare. Speaking to supporters in Tampa, Mr. Biden says he has no plans to take away a single penny from either program.
I know that a lot of Republicans, their dream is to cut Social Security and Medicare. Well, let me say this. If that's your dream, I'm your nightmare.
The Biden administration helps facilitate the release of Nicaraguan prisoners, including journalists and business leaders. The 222 former prisoners were greeted by family and friends today at Dulles Airport. Political activist Roy Molina.
We've been fighting for the liberation of Nicaragua since April 19th. The thing started on April 18th, 2018. April 19th, we were at the embassy of Nicaragua protesting for democracy in Nicaragua. We've been under a rule of the dictator for over 40 years now.
The Biden administration inches closer to vaccinating poultry to fight the bird flu outbreak. CBS's Alexander Tin.
The Biden administration has now begun reaching out to industry stakeholders over the possibility that vaccines could be rolled out for poultry to counter the record global avian flu outbreak that has decimated flocks of wild and commercial birds.
A progressive voice for rural Wisconsin. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane McNair. Here's what you need to know. The Republican-controlled legislature has the power to anonymously delay or permanently stop stewardship projects in Wisconsin. If conservationists or the state want to purchase land, certain thresholds need to be approved by the legislature. Governor Evers wants to stop the anonymous objections. His budget will also include more money for planting trees, fighting against invasive species, and job training in clean energy and conservation. It will cost Wisconsin farmers more to get their crops in the ground this year. Ag economists are expecting planting costs to be 10 to 20% higher than last year, and that increase is likely here to stay. Experts say if farmers have a good growing season and they can export corn and soybeans, they should be all right. It's expected the economy will adjust to the higher prices over time. I'm Jane McNair. This is Civic Media News.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripescast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. We talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
The Shaw 101 FM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So yesterday on the program, we talked about this piece of legislation banging around in the Iowa Senate, I believe it is, that would change some of their child labor laws. And like I said, you know, you look at the movement that's going on in this country. It's all about forcing poor women to have children because we need that cheap labor. And I go back to that Tom DeLay quote from 2007 where he said, we wouldn't need immigrants if we had those 40 million children that have been aborted, because we could put them right to work doing these cheap labor jobs. And you go, 2007 today, it's about 16 years. So it seems like the plan, force people into having kids, get them to work those crummy jobs that nobody will take except for people who are at the most desperate point, seems like part of the plan. And here to share some thoughts on this piece of legislation, I've asked Jennifer Shearer to come talk with us. She's the senior policy coordinator with the Workers' Power Project at the Economic Analysis and Research Network, part of the Economic Policy Institute. That is a mouthful. You can check out their website at earn.us. We'll get links out on social media. Jennifer, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, you bet.
So walk me through what this legislation is. I'm reading it. It says, the way I'm reading it, we're going to open up more hours for kids 14 and 15 to be able to do more dangerous jobs than they'd been done in the past, working around coolers and things like this. How bad is this? Or is this just common sense moving forward? I'm curious your thoughts.
Well, it's shocking, truly shocking. And really flies in the face of common sense and also, decades of research about what we know about children and youth and teens, their physical development, their mental and emotional development, their education, and their ability to learn to be productive workers in a healthy fashion. So the bill is sweeping. It proposes at least, over 20 different changes to state child labor laws in Iowa. And so it's complicated in one sense, but I think what's not complicated is that it is part of a very coordinated national industry initiative to roll back protections that have been in place for decades. And you are right, it both proposes extending the number of hours that 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds can work during school year. It also removes from the prohibited list certain occupations that for years have been deemed hazardous based on the fact that youth are more likely to be injured or disabled when doing them or exposed to hazards that could have serious long-term harm. The other thing that it does is create an entirely new category of jobs that can be applied for through what are called work-based learning programs. Now, in theory, there's nothing wrong with work-based learning, but as with everything, this is a doubled in the details kind of situation. So the definition of work-based learning in this bill includes removing any restrictions whatsoever, in theory, because it allows the labor commissioner to waive prohibitions on hazardous work for 14 to 18 year olds, as long as they are falling under the umbrella of this broadly and frankly not not really defined category of work-based learning.
So let me ask you this. So if
a 14-year-old could be doing any job.
Yeah. Right. So if someone, let's say the meatpacking industry says, you know what, we're going to start an apprenticeship program to work on the kill floor, but we're going to partner with the local, public school, the local school district, and we're going to have this pipeline. We're going to bring in kids. We're going to teach them to work on the kill floor. At 14, could they conceivably get a waiver to do that?
The way this legislation is written right now, anyone could get a waiver. Yeah.
I mean, because I see that as the most extreme case, because, not too long ago, there was the story that came out that in Iowa, I guess it was, you had a number of immigrant children working in these facilities, 13, 14 years old, while going to school during the day, working at night. It seemed curious that this bill would now come out now after that story to kind of be the pathway to making that kind of behavior legal. Or am I being conspiratorial?
No, I think that's exactly right. And I think we know that in part from what groups like National Federation of Independent Business, National Restaurant Association, industry groups are saying. They know that many of the provisions in this state legislation directly contradict and conflict with federal laws, which even if this bill were to be passed tomorrow in its current form, the federal law preempts and overrides much of what this bill would say in practice. Their goal is to ratchet down regulations across the country. They've floated this, similar pieces of this legislation in Ohio and Wisconsin, in other states. And they've been very upfront about the fact that their long-term goal is to put enough states on the path of rolling these standards back so that they can convince Congress to roll them back for the whole country. And I think you're right, that I think one way we have to view this is the reality is there are many corporations that aren't waiting, they're not asking permission to violate these laws. They're already doing it. Investigations, as you said, of multiple meatpacking facilities in the Midwest right now, the Hyundai, Kia, auto supply chain in Alabama, multiple factories under investigation, already facing fines for having workers as young as 14 in full-time production jobs. Those violations are happening. They're happening in fast food at significant disturbing numbers. And so it is absolutely a way for corporations to take a step toward legalizing the practices that they're already implementing.
Now, it seems like we're going back 100 years, especially on this law. But here's the thing. You hear this kind of revisionist history. And I got a bunch of people yesterday emailing me going, when I was 14, I did this job. When I was 13, when I was a kid, you hear this kind of stuff all over we didn't have all these protections. And I go, nonsense. Yes, you did. No one was allowed to use the meat slicer unless you were a certain age. And I'm old enough to remember that. How much of this kind of, we're just trying to get kids, into the workforce, trying to give them the skills that they're going to need. Because, and I'm sure you've heard this, today's kids are just lazy. They just want to lay around and do nothing. They got to get to work. They got to know what it's like to earn a buck. I guess the question that I'm coming up with is, how is the rhetoric that we keep telling ourselves affecting the policy that they're trying to ram down our throats?
This is a little bit personal to me, I have to say. I worked in a grocery store for several years in high school. I did a lot of babysitting. I helped my brother with paper routes. I learned valuable lessons and skills from all of those jobs as a young person, but that's absolutely right. I wasn't allowed to go behind the deli counter and use the meat slicer with no training. And I think about the difference between that and my grandmother, who was the daughter of immigrants to Iowa and whose mother died when she was 10 years old. And from that time on, who was an unpaid domestic servant in other people's houses until she turned 19 or 20. And is that acceptable, right? I mean, these are work work occurs on a spectrum of acceptable to unacceptable conditions. And the reason we have child labor laws and boundaries around what is acceptable and not acceptable is because we know that children, when forced into situations against their own will, because their families are desperate, because their families are poor, are harmed. You know, my grandmother for years did not talk about her childhood because of the kinds of trauma, physical and mental, emotional, I don't know what other kinds, because some I'm sure she didn't ever tell us about, that she suffered. So I think we all know that there are forms of work that are healthy, safe, developmentally appropriate, age appropriate for youth, and that there are forms that neither we nor you know, our parents or children would want to be part of.
No, you're absolutely right. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Jennifer Shearer. She's a state policy coordinator for the Workers' Power Project with the Economic Analysis and Research Network, EARN.us, their website, a part of the Economic Policy Institute, EPI.org, their website. We'll get links out on social media so you can check out all the incredible stuff that they do. But Jennifer, the part that really gets me is, you know, all of the talk of, you know, what we just went through is bad enough. They go even further into saying that, you know, along with, you know, these waivers and these exemptions, because there's now going to be a pipeline and apprenticeships or pre-apprenticeships or whatever they're going to create, is this shielding corporations from liability? I'm like, are you kidding me? We're going to shield corporations in the event that a child is killed on the job? We're completely usurping labor law in this country to get cheap labor into some of these business interests. This is, for me, probably the most egregious of all of this bill. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, there is a component of this bill that explicitly says that an employer will bear no responsibility, no liability in the event that a student, a youth worker, is sickened, injured, or even dies while they're engaged in some form of work-based learning. So, you know, that sets up a situation where, again, we talked earlier about the reality that the proposed structure of work-based learning in the bill opens up the potential for any age teen to be doing any job as long as they obtain a waiver. So there is both the removal of all of the existing research-based restrictions on hazardous work combined with complete immunity. So what incentive does that leave employers to provide proper training, provide proper equipment, provide and remove hazards from a workplace? I mean, I think the other part of this that we should acknowledge, and I think we can't talk about child labor in isolation from all other forms of labor, the conditions that children work in are, you know, affect the conditions that adults work in. And we know that ratcheting down those standards means lower standards for everybody.
Absolutely. And this is one of those things where you're going to use this law. And I've had people say, well, you know, parents won't allow this. And there are good companies out there going, parents aren't going to know. And a lot of them are going to be in poverty situations where they're going to have to look the other way because they need the income to survive. And you're always going to have these race to the bottom corporations who are going to cut corners and shift liability and blame somebody else just to make a profit for themselves. So this is why we have regulations. This is why we have standards. And I know my Republican friends love to scream, job killing regulations. But the reality is the lack of regulations cost people lives. And I go back to the Breaker Boys, you know, in the mines 100 years ago who lost fingers and arms, and the people who worked in the mines, the kids who lost legs. What happens to them in this environment if that happens? We don't have a social safety net that's going to help them. The companies aren't going to be liable. Who's going to be responsible? Who is this fall on the shoulders of? The people who are least able to shoulder it. And that, again, is another problem I have.
So that is a frightening scenario, and I had thought about that as well, that, you know, well-intentioned parent whose child may be recruited to be part of a so-called work-based learning program, what happens if, even under the best circumstances, where there wasn't some kind of intentional negligence on the part of an employer, but an accident happens, and their child needs serious medical treatment, or their child is permanently disabled, who bears the expense of that under this bill? I think it falls back on the family. And there's no reason to think that any family would know that ahead of time. It seems incredibly deceptive and misleading to set up a structure like this as well.
So let me ask you the last line of questioning I've got for you. And this has got to be, on a certain level, once it's explained to people, it's got to be unpopular. What are the chances this gets through the Iowa Senate? I guess this is Senate File 167. What are the chances of this getting through the Senate, the House, and then getting onto the governor's desk and becoming law?
I hope there's no chance. And I think you're right that it is extremely unpopular. And I think we heard that in the testimony that folks began to give during a subcommittee meeting on this bill today. We're seeing that in the news coverage. And I think people are going to continue raising their voices in alarm and protest about what's being proposed. I think the obstacle and the problem, of course, is that too many of our state leaders are answering to out-of-state interests, or to a handful of wealthy, well-connected business and industry employer groups who do not represent the popular will of the people. And so that's how this is going to play out. But I do think many people are going to continue to raise their voices in opposition to this. Well,
the sad reality is, this is another one of those moments. Never let a good crisis go to waste. And they're not. They need cheap labor. And where do they go? We're going to go get the children. Scary, scary stuff. But Jennifer, I appreciate you taking some time, filling us in and keeping us up to date. I hope you'll come back and keep us up to date on what's going on as this hopefully dies a death soon. Thanks so much.
Yeah, take care.
Thanks so much, Jennifer Schaefer. Shearer, she's the senior policy coordinator there at the EARN Group, the Workers' Power Project at the Economic Analysis and Research Network. We'll get links out, earn.us. Quick break, right back with your thoughts, 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Yeah, this is another one of those things. And it's amazing to me. It's another one of these things that we do to people. Gotta get that cheap labor. Gotta get the cheap labor. The exploitable labor. Now, what's interesting to me is I look at a piece of legislation. This is bipartisan. Look, you know, you've got a Democrat in Massachusetts who has proposed a piece of legislation that would allow people who are incarcerated to get time off of their sentence if they donate organs. Stop and think about this one for a moment. I mean, let this sink in. How desperate, you know, I got to get out of prison. Here, take my kidney. Seriously. I mean, that's the world that we're wow. Let's go to the phones. Got Alice on one. How are we doing, Alice?
We're doing insane. I wondered if you saw that the Missouri Republicans blocked a proposed ban on kids, you know, under 18, carrying guns openly in public.
Yeah, the gun fetishists, they pose their infants with guns. Are you surprised?
Oh, I'm not surprised, but I thought, you know, I sat there and wonder and go, okay, so you have a 13, 14-year-old wandering around with their AR-47 and decides to go a little bit nuts, and then the Republicans get to scream about, you know, how the Democrats are causing chaos in the cities or something. I don't know. But it just seems to all tie in together.
No, it does. It all ties in perfectly together. They want cheap, exploitable labor. They don't care about anything else. That's what it's about. And that's the frustrating part of the moment that I'm in.
Yeah, me too. And also, I wanted to say, I helped out at the food bank, local food bank today, and everyone was up in arms because they had received, these older people that were on Social Security, had received a notice that their food stamps were being cut because of the increase in their Social Security benefits that Congress had passed a new law lowering their benefits. And I thought, oh, yeah, okay, something else to cause chaos.
Yeah, well, scary stuff.
There you have it. So you have a good evening, Rick.
Appreciate it, Alice. Thanks so much. No, I mean, you know, that's the sad thing. It's the world that we live in. It's when it affects us, only when it affects us. Do we really care? And, you know, I go back to this story in Massachusetts, this idea that we're going to, what the heck? You know, people who are incarcerated, they might want to get out an extra 60 days to a year. Are you going to give up a kidney for a year out of jail? I don't know that I'm thinking that. But they claim that, you know, the intent of this bill is because black and brown communities are overly incarcerated and the need for bone marrow and organs is so great in those communities that, hey, you've got a group of people there that you could pull from. So the idea is to start this bone marrow and organ donation program within the State Department of Corrections that would allow the individuals who are locked up to get as much as a year off. And I'm going, there's so many questions here. And it brings up just an incredible amount of the ability for abuse. Are we going to allow people to start buying organs? I mean, is this where this is going to go? Because in this country right now, you can't buy organs. Are people going to be desperate enough? Think about this for a second. Are you desperate enough to sell a kidney? You know, what if someone offered you 20, 25 grand for it? Would you sell your kidney? How much is that worth? And, you know, I've got some free market friends who go, it's a commodity. It's in high demand. If you've got one, you should be able to negotiate for it. I'm a little leery on that. I'm a little leery on opening that up. I'm curious your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Now, as we know now, federal law bars that from happening. You can't sell human organs or acquire it for something that's valuable. And what they're arguing is that this bill would be unconstitutional and would be illegal because what a moron, would be illegal because it violates that part of you can't acquire something of value. And the argument would be a year out of jail would be something of value, even if it is the state doing it. I find this, well, predictable. I mean, we're moving towards the Hunger Games kind of scenario, kind of world. So this kind of stuff, I guess it doesn't really surprise me. What does surprise me, it is it's a Democrat who put it forth. I don't get it. I'd love to hear your thoughts. If there's something I'm missing, I need to hear it. Email me.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. Sources tell CBS News that Special Counsel Jack Smith is calling on former Vice President Mike Pence as part of the Justice Department's probes into former President Trump. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
He wants to get a hold of everybody who was within the orbit of former President Trump to find out what documents there were, perhaps how they're being handled, and any conversations between Trump and Pence.
More than 20,000 people have died in the earthquakes that hit the Turkey-Syria border. Ali Shion Carrer in Florida is waiting to hear about the fate of some of his relatives.
I can't sleep. I can't eat. I know that people over there, it's suffering.
The State Department says the Chinese balloon that flew over the U.S. last week is part of a major surveillance program that has been used to spy on at least 40 countries. Deputy Secretary of State Wendy Sherman.
This irresponsible act put on full display what we've long recognized, that the PRC has become more repressive at home and more aggressive abroad.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Milwaukee has two of the worst traffic bottlenecks in the country. Those are the Marquette Interchange and the Zoo Interchange. That's according to research by the American Transportation Research Institute. The study goes on to say congestion leads to 1.2 billion hours of lost trucking productivity every year. That adds up to $74 billion a year. A lifetime fishing license may someday be a thing in Wisconsin. There's a bill in the state legislature to let people pay a one-time fee of $570. The bill's author says it could encourage more people to fish and boost Wisconsin's environmental stewardship programs. In sports, the Bucks trade 5 second-round picks to get former Marquette star Jay Crowder from Brooklyn in a three-team deal involving the Pacers. Milwaukee's at the Lakers tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold.
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous Ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Stories come to life at your local parks and forests. They're places of wonder, and they're closer than you think. Make the forest part of your story today at a local park near you, or find one at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, again, amazingly, you know, the email box full of angry conservatives saying, we never wanted to touch Social Security. You're lying. And look, you know, even the representatives, you know, the people who are basically saying, don't tell us what we said. You know, don't remind us. Don't say the thing that we said we were going to do. Mike Lee being the, you know, just the feigned outrage. I mean, that was really, you know, in the best kind of Bill Burr moment of, who, me? What? Wow. What an amazing display. Got to give credit. Academy Awards all around. And here to share some thoughts on the State of the Union address and the performances. Look, Republicans, amazing performances. It also got yourself kind of in a twist. I've asked my good friend Craig Harrington to come talk with us. Craig's the chief cooking bottle washer over there at Media Matters for America. Craig, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you. Likewise, it's always great to be on.
So, you know, let's start with that. The first thing, you know, don't tell us what we said. We know what we said, and we didn't want anybody else to know it. Are you surprised at the Mike Lee thing is just amazing. You know, that really, that was Academy Award winning stuff right there.
Yeah, and the Mike Lee, for anyone who wasn't watching the State of the Union, I imagine there are plenty, maybe 30 million people watched, which means 300 million people didn't. For people who weren't watching, President Biden pointed out the simple fact that some Republicans had a plan to, quote, sunset Social Security and Medicare. His use of that verb was not an accident. The verb was actually used on page 38 of former National Republican Senate Committee Chairman Rick Scott's policy agenda for the 2022 midterms. He said that all federal legislation would sunset every 5 years and worthwhile legislation would be reauthorized by Congress. Now, what that would mean is that a potential political logjam could be created every 5 years over not just Social Security and Medicare, but every single piece of federally authorized legislation. So the President Biden actually was being more articulate and more delicate than the Republicans deserved. But the most interesting thing about this is, so President Biden says, basically, some of you, not all of you, want to cut Social Security and Medicare. And there's shocks and guffaws. There's people screaming at him from the audience. It was like he was giving a speech to the House of Commons in the UK, not to the House of Representatives in the United States. But there is Mike Lee just agape, his jaws on the floor, and sitting right next to Mike Lee, right next to him, is Senator Rick Scott, the National Republican Senatorial Committee Chairman, who had a plan to sunset Medicare. It was in a plan that he published, which was so unpopular and so shocking to many Republicans who actually wanted to win races, that Mitch McConnell had to come out the day it was released and disavow it. Mitch McConnell, a Republican who wants to cut Social Security, came out and disavowed Senator Rick Scott personally. So this wouldn't have been surprising to Mike Lee. They all had conversations about this in the media and in their caucus group during 2022. But making it even more insane is that Mike Lee, there's this fascinating piece of opposition research video that's been circulating for a number of years, but it sort of reappeared in the last couple of days. In 2010, when Mike Lee was running for Utah Senate as part of the Tea Party Revolution, the reaction against Barack Obama and the supposed overgrowth of the administrative state, Mike Lee specifically campaigned on video saying that his goal is to uproot and end Social Security. He wants to end Social Security, he wants to end Medicare and Medicaid and other government entitlement programs. That was his stated campaign position on a video that has been circulating in the public for 12 years. So the idea that Mike Lee would be shocked to hear that some Republicans want to target Social Security when sitting next to the man who wanted to sunset the program, and while being an explicit supporter of cutting Social Security, not cutting it, ending Social Security.
Taking it out by the roots.
Stupendous. Yeah. It is stupendous. Up by the roots. Up by the roots is the direct quote.
Yeah, but that's not new. I mean, you had, if you remember Paul Ryan, you know, evidently he was doing keg stands, reading Ayn Rand, dreaming about, fantasizing about, fetishizing, destroying Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And I don't, again, you know, I went to college, I did the keg thing, keg scene too. I don't ever remember the kind of parties where let's kick granny to the curb, let's steal granny's pension and so, I don't remember those parties. But according to him, he attended them.
Yeah, Paul Ryan, and that quote is actually from an interview he was giving and a panel discussion that was being moderated by National Review editor Rich Lowry. And I think it was 2013 or something like that, maybe even earlier. And he talked about how they had been talking about cutting these programs since they were sharing beers around the keg in college. And they're a little bit older than me, but not that much older. And I can't imagine what it was like to be in college thinking about cutting social safety net programs for the public. But it's interesting that you bring up Paul Ryan because, you know, what we're here to talk about is how this event was covered, how this conversation about Social Security was covered, and how it is sort of driven out in the aftermath of the of President Biden's what is largely being seen as a very effective State of the Union address. Paul Ryan was one of the most recent Republican speakers of the House. The current Republican Speaker of the House is Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy and Paul Ryan used to make up two-thirds of what was then called the Republicans' quote young gun trio. So it was Eric Cantor, Paul Ryan, and Kevin McCarthy. I always call him Mike McCarthy, who's a football coach. Yeah. Kevin McCarthy. They wrote a book called Young Guns, and it explicitly stated their plans, and they used the word reform and strengthen to talk about their plans to cut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. But they had a whole book in 2010 that was their campaign cycle book as they planned to kind of take control, take the policy reins of the Republican House caucus and eventually the entire Republican Party. Two-thirds of that book's authorship went on to become Speaker of the House. Eric Cantor nearly became Speaker of the House. And they have an explicit agenda in their book that they put their names on to cut Social Security by privatizing it and then devolving certain payments for other Social Security measures like SSDI, the disability insurance component, turning that into block grants that are then provided out to the states. Block grants don't grow as fast as traditional apportionments, and it would result in a long-term cut.
Right.
These people have they've literally attached their names to this. Media Matters covered this pretty extensively, and I apologize if I feel like I'm simmering at an 11, it's because I am. Republicans have been fighting against Social Security since 1936. That's 87 years. 87 years where they have complained about it every single year. They didn't really, really start fighting against it until the end of the Eisenhower administration, because Eisenhower correctly said that touching it would be the third rail in American politics. But Republicans have wanted to get rid of Social Security. They've wanted to root it out and uproot it since 1936. It has been a century of this. And so to pretend now that this isn't the plan is just willful ignorance on their part. Or rather, it's intentionally misleading on their part, and for media to go along with it, which unfortunately many mainstream and of course all right wing outlets have gone along with, requires a willful ignorance that is frankly difficult to understand or believe.
Well, again, it comes back to this the frame of we've got in order to save it, we have to kill it. This is what we have to do. Well, because it's unsustainable. It's going broke. We've heard the frames, and I've been hammered with them over the last several hours of people going, well, you don't want to take Social Security. They just want to do X, whatever the latest scheme is, privatize, give us our own accounts, and you know all of these. No, they're trying to destroy Social Security as it is. It is something. It is the baseline. It is the line in the sand that says no one falls below this. It's the greatest anti-poverty program this country has ever devised. And they want to destroy that, that last part of the social safety net that they've been destroying for decades.
And for anyone who you mentioned something, you know, killing it to save it, you know, harming it to save it. This was something that actually Byron Donalds, who's a Republican member of the House, who very briefly flirted with pretending he was going to be the Speaker of the House during the 15 rounds that Kevin McCarthy was forced to go through with his public humiliation in his pursuit of the speakership earlier in January. Byron Donalds was being interviewed on Joy Reid's program on MSNBC about a month ago about Republican plans to cut Social Security, which he claimed is going to be insolvent. And he had this whole rigmarole. He's a certified financial planner. He's an investor. He understands how Social Security works. And he was using very precise language from the trustees report about Social Security and about how the trust fund, so the excess money in Social Security, is scheduled to run out sometime in the next 12 to 15 years based on some factors. And there are two things we can do. Either we can let it run out, and when it runs out, we can continue to make Social Security payments up to 85% of what would otherwise be provided, or we could do something to restore the trust fund. Either we could switch Social Security to being funded by income taxes, which would guarantee its solvency forever, or we could increase the payroll tax cap. You know, I make less than the payroll tax cap. The vast majority of Americans make less than $125,000 a year. If you make more than $125,000 a year, every dollar after that doesn't get taxed into the payroll tax cap and doesn't go into Social Security. So like LeBron James, who makes $100 million a year, only pays Social Security taxes on the first $125,000, which is the same my mom pays on the $30,000 or $40,000 a year that she makes. And the simplest solution is just to raise the payroll tax cap. That will fund Social Security forever, literally forever. Or you could cut it in 12 or 15 years when the trust fund runs out. But what Republicans want to do, what Byron Donalds wants to do, and what he was defending during that MSNBC interview, is he wants to cut it now so that we don't have to make cuts in the future. And frankly, the simplest solution I actually saw was from Nobel Prize winning economist and New York Times columnist Paul Krugman. He said, just cut it in 12 years. Like, that's been his argument actually for about a decade. Social Security was supposed to be insolvent already, and those trustees' reports have largely been incorrect. It's always been more solvent than they expected it to be, but it was supposed to be insolvent in 2022, 2023, 2024. And a decade ago or longer ago, Paul Krugman started arguing just like, rather than cutting it to save it now, just cut it when you have to cut it. If the trust fund ever runs out, if we ever allow it to run out, make the cuts then. But in the meantime, the most important anti-poverty program in the history of the world, Social Security, will remain at 100% until we are forced to make a change. We're not being forced to make a change right now. Republicans are just trying to use this as a forcing mechanism to get their policy preferences, which is to weaken Social Security, which has been their position for 9 decades.
Right. And they're holding the globe hostage over this debt ceiling thing. Look, I get that you want to destroy Social Security. I get ideologically you believe that the government can't or shouldn't do anything. I understand your, and this is the weird thing about Republican voters over the last couple of days that I've had conversations with, because I haven't found many Republican voters wanting to privatize Social Security, yet their ideology is, you know, free market privatization, you know, this kind of thought process that their Republican leaders are all in on board with. Do you see that there's a disconnect between the people who vote for these folks and the people who are casting the votes in our House and our Senate? Because I'm seeing a massive disconnect on this issue. There's a lot of disinformation on the right about what their own leadership wants to do.
This is actually a fascinating instance of the right-wing media, political and media echo chamber has been so successful in sheltering itself from the rest of reality and from mainstream media and from any legitimate critique that media and political actors today, particularly people who are young enough to have been raised through this system, to be raised in this disinformation landscape, they might not actually realize that what they're talking about is only popular inside of this sandbox in which they're operating. Cutting Social Security is only important, necessary, or popular on Fox News, on Fox Business, in the pages of the National Review. If you talk to someone who votes for Republicans, like many of my own family members, they don't want to cut Social Security, or rather, they don't want to cut their own Social Security, though they might be willing to cut my Social Security. All I want is to pay payroll taxes so my parents can retire with dignity, even if a couple of those parents might want to cut my Social Security one day. All I want is to make my payroll taxes and allow people to retire with dignity.
Yeah. Now, the other side of this, Craig, and I haven't met very many parents who go, screw my kids. I haven't met them. I have met a whole bunch of people who go, it's the others. It's the boogeymen. It's that because the right does a masterful job of giving them, you know, someone to blame. There's always someone to blame. There's always a victim, and there's always someone who's, you know, crushing down on them, and there's always someone to blame. And it's not you and your kids. No, it's, you know, we give all these illegals money. I've heard that so much that evidently all they have to do is get here. And then they get to collect Social Security for life, which I have yet to find anyone who does that. But then again, it's like that welfare queen driving around in the Cadillac, drinking Dom and eating steak all day. I haven't found her either. They make these characters, these figures that they then can blame for everything that aren't really fixed in reality.
Yeah. And that's the other thing. When you talk to real people about what a policy position like cutting Social Security or cutting any entitlement program, reducing national defense authorizations, really cutting any spending whatsoever, you run into people who suddenly don't support that. You might talk about waste and fraud and abuse in the military or waste and fraud and abuse in the Medicare system. But the fact is, we have 76 independent inspectors general, and we have a government accountability office. We actually have really good data on government waste, fraud, and abuse, and it runs at about 5%. Now, 5% of $6 trillion is a huge amount of money. But 5% of $6 trillion is not going to solve the national budget deficit. It's not going to erase the federal national debt. 5 or 6% is actually considerably lower than the corporate overhead losses that you'd see from private insurance companies or from the police or from private security companies. The government actually runs very efficiently because there is so much oversight of the government. And once you start to actually think about how much abuse there is in the system and how much the deficit is, how much people think that they want to take back from the government, you start to realize that people actually don't really support these policies in the real world.
Yep.
The only people support them are these theoretical positionings that you see from political and media elites who are operating in an echo chamber that is not permeable to the real world or to real society. And people who use that media and political ecosystem for their information are widely misled by that echo chamber. The moment you take them outside of it and you start to have a real honest conversation about the ramifications of what these policies would be, you see people immediately abandon them.
You're right. Who's the Republican representative? Gave some speeches a couple of days ago where he held up a blank piece of paper and said, these are all the people who called my office to cut spending. Basically admitting what you just said. Nobody wants to cut spending. Nobody wants to cut. We yeah. want our tax dollars to be the most efficiently possible. But I think the vast majority of working people say, look, we need to go back to a tax code like the good socialist president, Dwight Eisenhower. We need to start taxing these rich people who have been walking away, these big corporations who are pocketing billions and billions and paying zero in taxes. We need to start taxing these people and funding the things that we want and need.
Yeah, let's return to the alcohol and gasoline and tobacco taxes of socialist President Richard Nixon and the income taxes at 70%. The vast majority of people don't actually support the ideas that come out of the right-wing media ecosystem. And it's important to remember that because the right-wing media ecosystem is entirely impermeable to thought. It's entirely impermeable to fact check. They do not respond to outside stimuli. They're being driven by their own interests and they're being driven by their own ideology, but they're not really getting much of this cue from the voting public. And one of the people, oddly, who understands this is Donald Trump. You know, in the past few weeks, as Republicans started talking about holding the government hostage through the debt ceiling crisis, which they have manufactured to cut Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid and other entitlement programs, the person who came out and told them not to do this, don't do this in 2024 when we need people to vote for us, was Donald Trump. Donald Trump lives in Florida. Social Security and Medicare recipients make up a gigantic proportion of his white working class base, his overwhelmingly predominantly white voting base. Are largely elderly and retirees. These are people who have paid into these systems and who deserve to get payouts from them. These are people who are entitled to these services. And Donald Trump needs their votes. And he's asking Republicans not to do this. And yet many Republican representatives who operate in the safest possible gerrymandered districts, who get all of their information from Fox and from the National Review, maybe if you're lucky, they own a subscription to the Wall Street Journal, which actually does have some good reporting on top of its insane editorial board. These representatives, they don't operate in the real world, and their electoral positions and their political opinions are not based on the simple realities that you have to face when you're running, say, as a statewide or as a national federal candidate. Oddly enough, like, the voice of reason in the Republican Party on Social Security is Donald Trump. And the most unpopular thing he did during his administration wasn't the baby cages. It wasn't all the other things. It wasn't the Muslim ban. The most unpopular thing he did was adopting Republican orthodoxy on tax cuts for the wealthy and corporations. That was actually where his popularity bottomed out in December of 2017. And the Republican Party had never recovered from that. But it could have been even worse. Because remember, they tried to repeal the ACA, which was deeply unpopular. And many Republicans, during their budgeting and their tax cuts negotiations, they wanted to take a shot in Social Security and Medicare. And the guy who told them, I'm not signing that, was Donald Trump.
So we have Donald Trump to thank for Social Security and Medicare not being, and that's going to be a hard pill for some to swallow, but you're not wrong.
It's not that he's to thank for it. He was just purely self-interested. Donald Trump doesn't care about Social Security recipients. He doesn't care about retirees. He doesn't care about pensioners. He just wants to win Florida, because if he doesn't win Florida's electoral votes, he's a dead letter as a national political candidate. But you know, the Republicans who are running the show in the House of Representatives, like, they don't need Florida's votes. Kevin McCarthy doesn't need a single vote out of Florida. And so all he's trying to do is hold together his coalition long enough to keep that gavel.
So last question I've got for you. Is this since, you know, and I thought Biden did a masterful job of spinning their outrage and their "you lie" and all the other stuff that they, you know, they, the children couldn't hold their water, and spinning this into them going, "We would never do that," because now the message is Republicans are never going to do it. They swore they weren't going to do it. We saw it on TV. They're not going to do it.
Yeah, the unfortunate thing is the Republicans' protests actually convinced some mainstream reporters like Jonathan Carl from ABC News. His immediate reaction after the speech was like, well, Biden was out over his skis there. He was embellishing with Republicans. No Republicans actually want to cut Social Security. Like, of course they do. We just named them. We could have this conversation for hours and hours. Thousands of Republicans are on the record saying they want to cut Social Security. But the fascinating thing was going into that speech, Biden was getting savaged by mainstream press. And he had a wonderful speech. And that performance in particular, where he walked the Republicans into this box canyon and tricked them all in front of 30 million viewers to attesting that they would never touch Social Security and Medicare as part of budget or debt ceiling negotiations, that was a masterclass. And the fascinating thing was when CNN cut to the speech, the very last piece of commentary was from a Republican strategist who's on their payroll named Scott Jennings. And Scott Jennings said that the thing Biden needs to do tonight is announce his retirement, like resign the presidency or announce that he's not running for reelection. That's the only thing he could do that would have a winning speech. And the panel more or less agreed with him. Democratic strategist Van Jones, who was a big Trump fan, actually thought that was a crazy position, to his credit. And then immediately after the speech, CNN was just blown away by Biden's performance and how he had gotten this raucous, frankly, really inappropriate Republican audience on board with defending Social Security to the hilt. People thought it was a masterclass. And literally, the mainstream outlets were calling for him to resign at 8:58 p.m. And by 10:15 p.m., they were entirely on board with this being perhaps the best speech he's ever given of his political career and the thing that's going to launch him into 2024. You just don't see stuff like that coming out of State of the Union. The State of the Union is important, but they're never this important. And this one was important.
Oh, this was a BFD, to steal a Biden frame. But Craig, I appreciate the time. As always, good stuff. I look forward to talking to you again real soon, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Our good friend Craig Harrington, he is the research director over there at Media Matters for America. MediaMatters.org is the website. If you want to check out the work that they do, we'll get links out on social media. You can do that. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. Working people come to talk. Tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So Brett Favre in the news, and not for a good reason. Evidently, Brett Favre is suing Shannon Sharp, Pat McAfee, and Mississippi auditor Shad White. And why is he suing them? Well, defamation of character. Evidently, Brett and his New York lawyers have decided that, well, we're going to go after them for telling what is the way I'm looking at it is the truth. Now, I know someone who Favre threatened with a defamation suit, so I'm waiting for it to trickle down. And when I talk to my friend about this, I'm going, the best thing that could happen is Favre sues you because there's this thing called discovery. And that means all of the things that he claims aren't true, you know, like the millions of dollars that they have records of him being able to put into his pocket. It was $1.1 million that he was paid for speeches that he never gave, and $5 million that he lobbied for his alma mater, the University of Southern Mississippi, where his daughter was playing volleyball, for a new volleyball court. And here's the kicker. You know where the money came from? It came from the food stamp programs. They were literally stealing food out of the mouths of children. Yeah, Brett, this is doing wonders for your image. Keep it up. Sue more people. Wow. Know when to stop. Know when to stop. Anyway, if you missed any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, you'll find ours. Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.